Hello again, this is Robert Rodriguez. On this disc, I'll talk about how you can take $7 million and make it look like $30 million using money-saving techniques and shortcuts, you know, not used by bigger movies. So let me first set up this scene. This is Steve Buscemi walking in to talk to Cheech the bartender. That's Tito Lariva sitting at Steve's left. He's a musician friend of mine that does some of the music in the movie. I think there's a few big misconceptions about movies in general when you start getting into the bigger budgets. Like, that bigger budgets help you achieve a bigger movie. I mean, it's not always the case. I think that what can happen is that you can get too used to having the money solve your creative problems. The nice thing about doing a low-budget movie is that you're forced to be creative all the time. One thing that I found was that no matter what you're working on, whether it's a low-budget movie or a big-budget movie, you have problems on the set every day. And you can solve the problems either creatively or with money.
This is damn good.
And when you're working on a low-budget movie, you really don't have a choice. You have to be creative. When you're on a bigger-budget movie, money is readily available, say from a studio or from whoever else is foolish enough to give you money for a movie. You tend to, use it as a money hose to kind of wash away problems that you come up with. So what I enjoyed doing on this movie, on Desperado, was to take the $7 million the studio gave me to make a movie with, and instead of making a small dramatic film, which is usually what you make in Hollywood if you have $7 million to work with on a budget, I wanted to do a bigger movie, because $7 million for a small dramatic film would be enough money, would be a lot of money to work with, it would be a comfortable shoot to fit that budget. I wanted to do some bigger. Action movies in Hollywood these days cost about $30 million. In fact, in the summer action movies, there's about $50 million and go up. That's where they start, it's about 50. So this was going to be a summer action movie, so when you think about it that way, $7 million really isn't a lot of money to compete. But I did it anyway because I knew it would be enough for us. There would be no money host problems. I would have to struggle to put every cent up on the screen and to be creative again. So I brought along director of photography, Guillermo Navarro. He's a Mexican DP who shot this movie. Gave it a really great, expensive look, but he's very, very fast. I also brought in Cecilia Montiel. She's the production designer. These are people who are used to working on much lower budget movies and being very creative and thought they could really expand and come with a slightly bigger budget than they're used to, be able to really give the movie a great look. Because I wanted to show the industry what I could do with $7 million, just as they saw what I did with $7,000. Just in case they didn't believe what I did on the first film, I knew that this time they could watch and see. Movies have gotten so expensive that I felt if I could pull this off, that I could probably work in town forever, because there's always some studio or financer with a medium-sized budget that wanted to make it look bigger. So how do you make $7 million look like $30 million? So you can compete with the big summer action movies? Well, first off, use the same two stunt guys over and over. You're going to meet them in a few minutes. They're going to be flying around. Hank and Troy, we use them all through the movie, and I'll keep showing you every time they keep popping up. They're sitting back there. We try not to show their faces too much early on because you recognize them too much, but they're stepping up behind Antonio right now, and they're going to do all the big stunts, and we just keep dressing them up differently. In fact, Antonio got kind of tired of every day we'd go to film, he'd see the same two guys show up, and he's like, man, didn't I kill you already before?
That's what it was. Mucho.
We had 2 days to shoot this entire opening. The reason we were rushed was that in order to have a great cast but stay on budget, I made deals with the actors on a per-day basis. So to save money, I paid Steve Buscemi to work for 7 days and Cheech Marin to work for 6 days. So we couldn't go past that or we'd owe a lot of money. So no matter what, we had to get rid of the actors quick, which is the main reason why the characters die so fast. We shot Steve and Cheech's dialogue here one day and the flashback material the next day. This is all during our first week of shooting. Saw this action with Antonio and the guns and guys flying around. And this was the day after the other shot. That was Hank. No, that was Troy going through it all there. Here's Hank. No, that's Troy again. Troy got hit two times in a row. And then you're going to see this next guy who gets punched, that's Hank. So that guy who just did those two stunts, that was the same dude. That was Troy. And this guy coming up here, that's Hank. Hank and Troy are going to be doing all the stunts from now on. I storyboarded the sequence so that we could really get the stunts that we needed, because there's wire gags like that there. That's we used air rams for the guy flying into the fan. And to set that stuff up, it takes time. And if you don't plan ahead, it can really eat up a lot of time. It's time we didn't have. So I didn't storyboard anything on Mariachi, mainly because I didn't have a crew to show it to. But this time, since I did have a crew and I had a stunt coordinator and we were going for bigger stunts, I have to storyboard all this. There's Troy again. Part of what helped was that we actually shot this movie. If you saw the first Mariachi, you'll notice that a lot of this movie looks very similar to Mariachi, because we shot in the same town. This bar here, for instance, is the same bar that we used in Mariachi, the first bar he walks into. It's just dressed differently. That helped because, one, we already knew the town. It was less expensive to shoot there because we knew the locations and a lot of the people that owned the places, the locations. And it was easier to write knowing the locations in my mind. I could kind of write into the script details about the action. That was going to save us a lot of time and money. I'm terrible at naming characters. One of my main flaws, I think, as a writer, is not being able to really see the characters as flesh and blood characters, to the point that I can never figure out their names. So if you look at the end credits, you see that Cheech plays Short Bartender, and Steve Buscemi plays the character of Buscemi. I wrote the part for him, so I can never really come up with a name. So in the script, in the working script, I'd just write Buscemi for every time he had to speak. Thinking that I would change it later, you know, you never do. It always ends up, you never end up getting that. If you don't get that right off, you're never going to get it. Same with Quentin's character. He comes in later. He's called the pickup guy. And Butcho's guy, his right-hand man, is named Right Hand. So I always have lame character names. Not really, because he turned his attention. I wanted this action and this scene to be really over the top, so that people knew that the movie is dealing with a myth of this really crazy character, the mariachi with a guitar case full of guns. One thing I found was that people a lot of times didn't get the humor of the first Mariachi. They thought the movie was much more serious than it really was. I found that out when people saw Desperado and realized that it was a parody of action Western movies. They would say that this was a lot funnier than Mariachi. And I thought Mariachi was kind of funny too. It was quirky and different. But my theory on that is that people in the U.S. just really aren't accustomed to seeing foreign language films or subtitle films. Other countries, that's all they get are movies subtitled. Movies by us that are sent over there dubbed or subtitled. So they're used to them, but we're not. So when your average American sits down to watch a foreign film, they feel like they're really, you know, broadening their minds and doing so. So they sit down, they convince themselves that they're cultured enough and will enjoy the movie no matter what. And I think that people were who saw Mariachi were really surprised at how painless and watchable it was. The reason was, simple enough, it was really just a low-budget exploitation film. The fact that it was subtitled, though, meant that people watched it more seriously and would read a lot more extra meaning into things. I remember watching the movie with audiences at film festivals, and I hear people going, "Ah, you know, as they were reading different subtexts and meanings into the movie that I never put there. Suddenly the dog and turtle took on a higher purpose." It was pretty goofy. This movie had been shot in Spanish and subtitled. It would also be have extra reading new meaning into the Cheech's dancing toothpick or other things. I think people are a lot more forgiving in a foreign film. This movie made people realize that the idea of the minstrel with a guitar case of guns was really supposed to be silly to begin with. But we played so straight that I think people don't know whether to laugh or to take it seriously. And since the first movie got so much attention, I really wanted to start this movie off with the telling of a big myth. When Steve Buscemi talks about the mariachi in grand, you know, mythic strokes, he's really talking about people's perception of the first mariachi movie and the myth of how it's put together and all of that. Later, when the mariachi has to fight in the real bar with Cheech later, we come to realize that everything Buscemi was saying is actually true, that the mariachi is just as mythic as Buscemi made him out to be. This is the opening music scene. We got I went to Philadelphia to record this with Los Lobos. They were on tour just a few days before we shot the movie. I had an idea of what the action was going to be, and I had to come up with music to fit the actions. And I took some storyboards to them and asked them to come up with some songs. And when I got there, they'd been on tour and I had been really busy, and we didn't have any music for this. Cesar, Rosas played me a tape of this little song that he had come up with. It was much slower than this. I said, well, I guess, well, let's take that. Let's try and, you know, beef it up, make it faster, and construct it in a way that he can walk across the bar playing the lead and then whack the guy over the head. Oh, I want to point out this. I'm the editor on the movie. I edit pictures. See this mismatch right there on the guy with the big guitar? I put my credit right over that so you could see a bad mismatch edit, and then my name comes up as editor. We went ahead and recorded this song in about 7 hours, flew back to L.A., and I re-recorded the lead vocal with Antonio, and that's Tito and myself doing background vocals in the back. It was real slapped together production before we ran down and shot. It was literally the day before we flew down to Mexico. We had to have this song as playback on the set. This whole bar set, if you go back and look at the guitar and the big neon guitar, those little triangles in the background behind him look like kind of like marble. That's just like paper, cutout paper and neon and black paint. This is a bar we converted. Cardboard on the wall with holes punched in it with lights behind it to make the form of the guitar. Cecilia Montiel, my production designer, is really amazing at taking a few pennies and making a set look really rich and expensive. There's Moco, of course, Peter Marquardt from the first movie. Gained a few pounds since the last movie. Got out of the hospital and ate. This scene here is going to feature our first use. This is the first day of shooting. I wanted to get ahead of schedule, so when we got down to Mexico, we had all our equipment, and we're all just sitting around waiting for the shooting to begin a couple days later. So, oh, let's just start shooting today, you know, kind of break the ice. And so we went and filmed this scene. Two days before filming was supposed to begin, we used the guacamole gun. Right there, which I'll explain what that is later on. Works really well. Saves a lot of time, a lot of money. It's better than traditional squibs for something fast like this movie. I just want to mention something about that last scene that Antonio was singing over. One of the reasons I really wanted to cast Antonio is that he's made over 40 films. I mean, he's done a lot of movies. And he plays his own guitar, he sings his own stuff, he does his own stunts. He was really an ideal choice to not just act the mariachi, but to be the mariachi, and really, he'd never done an action movie, so he's always wanted to do something like this. The guy to his left, though, during that scene, is the original mariachi, Carlos Gallardo. He made an appearance as Antonio's friend and co-mariachi. He's also my co-producer on this film, and we're so in need of actors for this movie. No actors wanted to come down and to Mexico and film the movie. We tried to get an extra mariachi to be along with Antonio, two extra ones, and it was just hard to find any actors who wanted to come down. I don't know why. Either they wanted too much money or they didn't want to come to Mexico. And so Carlos is one, and the other guy was just our production assistant, Tejas. He was a local who was working on our movie in the office, and I just said, oh, fuck it, let's just cast this guy. This guy's cool. Rather than bring somebody from the States, bring him down. This guy was already looked cool. He was ready to work, and everyone was energetic and wanted to be in the movie. I put a lot of crew members in the movie. I'll point them out as we go, because we had to cast mostly locally, and I had a lot of cool crew members that got the crew morale up. We had a small crew, so it kind of got everybody pumped up to know that every other day I would pick another crew member to be in the movie and give them a featured spot.
Suddenly, you're my big brother.
I'm reading this off the computer as I go and try to make notes. Sylvia, you hear clicking, that's what that is. We had to do this scene in half a day. It was, we have a 5.5-day working week. And the half day, that sixth day, is, you don't get much done. So this was a real rush to get this lighted, get the actors, you know, in this mode. And we just shot all the action the day before. We didn't get to the bathroom scene. And I don't like using second unit crews. Second unit crew is a second unit designed to go out and shoot minor things that you miss, or stunts or explosions or stuff that you don't really need to be spending time there. I don't like to use that. I like to shoot all this stuff, especially especially things that are kind of important, like the bathroom scene. I didn't want to pass that off to a second unit, but we're finding, because of our short shooting schedule, that we're running out of time to get it. So I had Antonio go shoot while I was shooting a scene with Salma. I had Antonio go shoot and direct this scene himself. He's always wanted to direct, and he's been wanting to direct for a while. So I said, well, rather than get a traditional second unit director to go shoot, I don't mind if Antonio goes and shoots this. So he went and he directed the sequencer for himself. We storyboarded it and he came up with some great shots and went and picked it up, saved us a lot of time. There's Danny Trejo. Danny's a California actor from, I think he lives in Venice. He's a great face. He walked in and I gave him the part right away and handed him a throwing knife, told him, go practice. I wanted him to learn how to use that knife. This next shot coming up here is a money shot. We designed a few crane shots in the movie to make the movie look more expensive. We rented the crane from Texas, so you had to plan out which day you were going to have it. Those signs that guy was putting up made out of like potato sacks or something, just to add a little production value and change the street a little bit from the mariachi. Crane down in a Tito spinning out a cigarette. This is the same bar from the first mariachi. We just painted the outside and made it look different. First mariachi, I wanted to use a crane as well. We were going to borrow the electrician's crane that they use for the telephone wires and stuff. But we didn't get a chance to use it, so I had to just use a ladder. So this time I really wanted to put a couple of crane shots in just to raise the production value on the picture. The reason I keep talking about production value and all that is because it's just an important thing on a low-budget movie. You don't want a low-budget movie to look low-budget. You know, I want people to see that we can use something other than money to make a movie look big. A lot of creativity. This is a house here, for instance. It's a white house made out of two trailers. Somebody made a house, put two trailer homes together and covered it over with plaster. And we painted it. It wasn't finished painted. We had to move the schedule up, and this thing, the paint's still wet there. Let me talk about this Steadicam sequence here. Oh, that guy right there, that's my first camera assistant right there, the guy walking out, the one fighting. Stuck him in the movie, that was Banano. I have a lot of my crew members standing around the circle. These are two guys we brought from L.A. to beat each other up. Robert Arevalo is a friend of mine I met in a friend of mine has an office, and Robert was working in his office. He was a kickboxer, actor wanting to break into movies, so I gave him a shot to be in the movie. This is a big Steadicam sequence. I got that thing strapped on. It's really hot outside, but I put this at the end of the shoot because I wanted the whole movie to practice the Steadicam, because I learned Steadicam just for this movie. Because I wanted to use Steadicam a lot in the movie, but it's expensive. I mean, you pay about $1,500 a day for a Steadicam guy. Plus, this was in Mexico, so for travel, room and board, all that would have been really expensive to have someone there all the time, because I wouldn't know. At any moment, I would want to grab the Steadicam and make a Steadicam shot. So what I did was I took a 3-day Steadicam course, and we got a Steadicam rig included in our camera package. Now for this leg break, we just have a little foam leg. It looked pretty lame on the set, but when you added the sound effect and cut it together quickly, the idea was he was going to get his leg broken, then with his broken leg, he was going to break the other guy's neck. It came out all right. We shot very fast. A lot of the reason why Steadicam seems so heavy when you put them on is because you got to learn how to balance them. I didn't know that. When I first put it on, I thought, oh, what a bad idea this is. It was so heavy, I thought I was going to break my back. But after a couple of days, the muscles that you need to hold it up and balance it begin to develop, and it's not so bad. But if you ever try one on, it's gonna kill you when you first put it on. I was already doing a lot of hand-holding, so I was getting kind of afraid that I was gonna be too ragged out to finish the movie by putting all that stuff on, but you did develop a knack for it. I saved that scene for last, really just for that, so that I would be better by the time I got there, because that was the most steady cam work involved. And also, being your own editor is really great, because all the Steadicam work in the movie, I think, looks pretty good. Mainly because I cut out all the mistakes. Since I was the editor, no one had to see how bad the Steadicam shots were. So whenever I screwed up, which was pretty much all the time, I just knew I would cut out the mistakes and the bumps and leave the parts that happened to be smooth. I screwed up so many times, I thought I would fire myself if I hadn't been saving so much money. And every once in a while, someone will point out a shot that they like, and it happens to be one of the Steadicam shots. And the gratification you get from that is much more so than if I had paid somebody else to do. This scene here is a is an ad-lib scene. I think I even wrote it in the script as being an ad-lib scene. I knew I would want Tito and Cheech, our old friends. And I wanted to bring an extra actor from L.A. that could work with Cheech in the scene, because I knew all the other bad guys would be just locals. And I wanted someone else that spoke English to be there with Cheech to bounce ideas off of. And in the script, I wrote this down to be an ad-lib scene between them. I gave them two takes, and they came up with this bit in Spanish. And it worked really well. Cheech and Tito have a good time together, and it shows that they're on the screen. This girl over here is Angela Lanza. She's my sister.
Excuse me.
She was originally going to be the original Domino in the first Mariachi movie.
I know what it's like.
She was the only real actress I knew at the time, but I couldn't afford to fly her in from New York, so I ended up casting a local girl to be in Mariachi. None of us knew that it would go on to be as notorious as it ended up being. That would have been her first starring role. She's worked in movies like Paris Family and other stuff since then, but that would have been her first starring role. So I brought her in for this.
Our waiter never came back to see if we wanted anything else.
Luis Perez and David Hidalgo from Los Lobos have an offshoot band called Latin Playboys. That's where the music from the scene is from. In case of the music, a lot of times I have songs and music styles that I'm thinking about using in the movie, so I put them into the computer for when I'm editing the film and use them as temporary music sometimes. It's easier to try out different songs before I edit a scene, find something that works, and then cut the scene to the music. It helps give the picture kind of a drive, and the music works better, I think, in the picture by planning out what music you want to use ahead of time. Here comes the pickup guy. This shot here, this is Quentin's idea for that shot. I was going to introduce him just by having him walk up in this shot. He was just going to appear and walk up and sit down, kind of not draw too much attention. But Quentin, this is what's cool about working with another director. He goes, well, why don't we go back and get a shot of me at the door coming in with this guy? So get kind of like, you know, the hero shot of us walking in. And it worked great.
This will just take a minute.
Muchas gracias.
This was our first day of shooting, actually. We shot so much film this first day. There was a lot of this high-speed work and other things we shot. We shot a couple scenes. Really wanted to hit the ground running. Just to give you an idea, let me give you some numbers here, just to show you the difference between this movie and the first Mariachi. I shot 25,000 feet of film on the first Mariachi, which is actually really good, because the final movie is only 9,000 feet, so it's about a 3 or 4 to 1 ratio. And that's the total amount shot, because I printed everything. 25,000 feet. On this movie, I shot 12,000 feet the very first day. So we're talking about after the third day on this movie, I shot more film than I shot on all of the first Mariachi, after just 3 days. And we shot for 39 days on this. So that gives you an idea of how carefully I was shooting the first Mariachi, because it was my own money, my own movie. No multiple takes, no overlap, nothing like that. This one, the film budget isn't so big, because it's not a big piece of the overall budget, so I shot a lot more shots to make it look more expensive. That's why we shot so much.
Listen to this.
That was a Los Lobos score over this scene, and the little guitar ditties they're playing. I didn't have the music for them when we shot this, so we just had them noodle around, and then Tito Lariva put in what they're playing later on. Like all this sound here, if you actually try this at home, you know it doesn't sound like that. It's a fake guitar we made. It's not really a five-string guitar we made. It's 6 strings.
Loosen them up.
Pretty tense situation the first 3 days of this movie. Not really, but they try and make it feel that way. Any studio will. Because I shot so much film, they were all freaking out, because on a regular movie, you shoot maybe 5,000 feet a day, 6,000 feet. We shot twice that amount the very first day. What they didn't realize is I was getting so many more camera setups and shots. I was really shooting the equivalent of 3 times the amount of work each day as a regular picture in order to make our 39-day schedule, make a big action movie in 39 days. And so we were shooting twice as much as film, but we're getting 3 times as many shots. They started realizing that by the end of the week and left us alone, but at first they were like really freaking out. I thought, hey, at this rate you're gonna go way over budget, but you know, you spend a little bit more in one area so you can save somewhere else. little boy's Abraham Verduzco. He's a young actor. He has actually a younger brother named Danny, who I used in Four Rooms. And they're both really great little actors, the Verduzco brothers. Up-and-coming Latin actors. I met Quentin at the Toronto Film Festival 2 years ago. Well, 2 years earlier than when we shot this, actually. It's 3 years ago now. And I wrote this for him then. Back then, he wasn't Mr. Pulp Fiction yet. He was Mr. Reservoir Dogs, and I was there with Mariachi, and I met him and Steve Buscemi there at the festival. Steve Buscemi, he had come up to me and said, "Hey, I saw Mariachi. If you ever have a part in a movie for me, I'd love to work with you. I mean, I like your work." And so I was so flattered, I went and wrote that whole part for Steve. But I had actually written this character, not for Quentin, but with Quentin in mind. I referenced him as a character when I wrote it, as some fast-talking dude who comes in and talks to Cheech. So when I told him Steve was going to be in the movie, he asked if there was a part for him and to play a small part because he wanted to do more acting. I told him, well, I'd actually base this on him. If he was interested in playing it, he could do it. At this time, he was actually starting the publicity tour for Pulp Fiction. It hadn't opened yet when we shot this. He was able to come for only one day, and we had to shoot very quickly to get it over with. He flew in the night before. He came to the set. I remember how impressed he was that he had a trailer for him, because there was an extra trailer there for him. Steve Buscemi had already left. Had a good-sized trailer, TV, stereo, all that. Only he never got to see it or use it because we had him on the set all day. We had to shoot all four of his scenes in one day. So I gave him three takes for this. He went on for about 6 minutes each take. The dick glass was all his ad-libs within the joke. And then I cut it down to 2 minutes. Lots of jump cuts, lots of... That's why he keeps cutting away to that other guy, because I'm cutting out any spaces so that he's just... shooting his mouth off the way he does in real life. He's just like talking as fast as he can. Just a real burst of energy in the scene. The guy's sitting right next to Quentin, by the way. He's another one of our office production assistants. That guy right there couldn't bring any other actors in from LA, so we just cast again locally and just used our crew. He had a peculiar headshot he gave me ahead of time in case I needed an extra. One of the shots of him showed that he didn't have any front teeth. It used to be a bull rider, and he knocked his teeth out. So I wanted to feature that here when he starts to laugh. You see that his teeth are gone. He was kind of depressed. He thought, oh, well, there goes my love life. Nobody's going to call me after this either. He thought I was just hiring him for his looks. He didn't realize I was hiring him because of his missing teeth. Yeah, we used the guacamole gun on David right there. If you go back and look, it looks pretty good. There's not much left. The sensors made us cut a lot of it out. But it was really beautiful before. 1 second Dave's sitting there laughing, and then the next second his face is just covered in blood. His full forehead, it looks like it's erupting from his head. My effects guy, Bob Shelley, used this compressed air gun contraption to shoot blood out of a long barrel. He would aim the barrel at the actor's head from right off camera and fire on cue. It was pretty accurate because he's right off camera. It's a long barrel. And we designed it when we... did the original shot on Mariachi's hand earlier in the movie when Mariachi gets his hand shot. The squibs weren't working. I wanted to try just throwing blood at it. And so he made that compressed air system that would shoot it out and perfected it throughout the movie. And we're really excited about it until we realized it looked too good and the sensors made it cut most of it out. The set here is sometimes it's easier to build sets than use real locations because you can't get the camera to do stuff like this. Move through the tight corners and areas and build secret walls and stuff. Sometimes it's just easier to have a set built. So we built this so we could come in handy because we had to shoot Quentin so fast. We just bounced him around. All these locations are right next to each other. We're just walking across the street to go to each location because we built the sets close by and had the natural locations nearby. That stuff all over the toilet is really vanilla and chocolate. Felipe Fernandez, my set decorator, kept throwing it on. I kept saying, more shit, more shit. Now this scene, this is the big shootout. What made this came together without too much complications was that, again, I saw this set in my mind when I wrote, because this was the set we used in Mariachi, so it helped a lot in figuring out what we're going to do and where it was going to take place. Let's see, I knew where the ceiling fans were, I knew where Cheech would be hiding, I knew where the case would be, because you had a mental picture of the place while you were writing. I really like I like Antonio's acting in this scene. He was really sick this day. In fact, we had to shoot this walking in scene about three different times on three different days. You can't tell that he's sick, but he's a great actor. He's pulling it off, but he's ready to fall over. I think we shot him coming through that door about 20 times on different days. In this scene, actually, Antonio used the crotch gun. It got cut out of the movie. It only shows up later on. I'll point it out. It broke up the rhythm of the scene too much. Originally, this movie was called Pistolero, and I wanted guns to be just coming out from everywhere, even from his crotch, from his sleeves. I don't regret taking it out because it makes a great appearance in this other movie I did, From Dusk Till Dawn, and it gets a huge laugh in that movie. It's because it's set up differently. But in this one, it just kind of came out of nowhere. This guy was the one who got shot with it. Antonio had his hands up, and he flexes his hips, and a gun comes out from a codpiece he's wearing in his crotch area. And a gun barrel comes up, and it shoots the other guy in the balls. And then his guns come up out from out of his sleeves. So I cut that out. It goes right to the guns coming out of the sleeves.
I'm not against you guys, so keep it down. Just keep it down.
My effects guy, Bob Shelley, again, he worked on Ghostbusters, and he had put some of the slime formula, mixed it in with the blood, so that when, like, this guy coming up gets twirled around, you see long strings of messy, bloody goo flying all over the place. All these guys here are local guys. All these guys here with the guns. Big artillery in their hands for the first time in their lives. I forgot to put my headphones back on, and I almost lost my hearing. I think those guys are about 5 feet away from my camera. I was directing at the same time I was shooting, and blasted the hell out of me.
What the fuck is going on?
It helped that I actually, in rehearsal, shot this scene in video, on Hi8 video, so I could show Antonio and everybody what it was going to look like edited, so we could formulate the track a little better. What we did was build basically an obstacle course. I mean, he begins at the door, he runs over to this corner. From this corner, there's the action of him running out of bullets and the guys crawling on top. There's a little bit of action in each corner of the room. And you notice he'll just like run a little obstacle course. It's always the easiest way for me to plan out an action scene, is just take somebody around the room. So in this corner, he meets this guy, pops out, shoots him, shoots the other guys off to the right. And then he's gonna jump up on top of the bar and walk across the bar to the other corner, find some action there, go to the third corner, and then before finally jumping into the pit. I'll talk about this guy later. He's kind of a cool dude. Antonio, if you go back on slow, you see that Antonio was hitting each one of those guys. He moves like a dancer. He really had the moves down. He was doing the behind the backs, and there was a guacamole gun on Quentin in the back of his head. Again, a lot of it got cut out. Antonio even made up this whip right there. He whips and the bullets go around the corner and shoot the guy. He's coming up with all kinds of moves. Antonio likes to do his own stunts, of course, so this was a one-take thing. We had all the shrapnel and wood flying up. I'm laying on the ground there. I'm getting the ground shot of him right there coming down on top of me. And these two elements were shot separately because Cheech, I'll have to explain what happened with Cheech. Cheech isn't really there. That's in somebody else's leg crawling on top of him. Antonio was sick that day, too. Here we go. Just getting this with just a wide angle lens. We put Steve Davison, that's my stunt coordinator. We had him on a wire there, pulling him back, ratcheting him back into the table. And I was running around like crazy. We had 3 days to shoot this, so I was this whole 10-minute reel. So I'm dropping the camera on the ground, I'm picking it up and grabbing it over here and running all over to make it look like a John Woo movie action scene would look. You know, a lot of shots, a lot of elaborate angles. I was laying on the floor right here for this fan shot. The old-fashioned way to get a shot like this, lay on the floor and have the actor and the fan crash down on top of you. Okay, here comes Cheech. Like I said, we shot all this out of order. I only had Cheech for those 6 days, so we had to get rid of him really quickly. So I shot all the scenes together, so we shot this before we did the shootout. This we did before we started the shootout. That's why he was hiding behind the bar so long, so I wouldn't have to show him that much. So when he pops out here, that bar, we had to approximate what it was going to look like, all torn up. He's going to get shot here, and his body, you'll see, is just going to disappear because I couldn't find a good body double for him, so I just let him disappear, and he'll reappear again later when Mariachi finds him dead, because we shot all those things together. We're going to give him the guacamole gun treatment. You notice behind Antonio, these candles are lit. I'll explain that later, as far as continuity in this movie goes. They weren't lit before. See, Cheech is gone. Where'd he go? He supposedly fell right on top of that bar, as you'll see later, but I just, for ease, make it easier on ourselves, I just let him disappear for a little while. This guy right here shooting with Antonio, he's really cool. This is Diego Sandoval. He's a cast member. He's a crew member. He's my second assistant director. And he's in pretty good shape for being a grandfather. He's did all his own stunts and took a break from work this one afternoon so he could be in the movie. He did his own cool slide and all that. After the end, after we kill him, put his headset back on, put him back to work. He's a second assistant director. My first assistant director shows up later on in the movie. So, all these guys are just cool. We had to cast locally anyway, all these people, so I preferred using my crew first, and then local second. This whole bit here was the last day. We were supposed to be out of this location already for this 3-day shoot in here. And we're just tired. We just have time to get all these shots. Each sequence seemed to get more complicated each time I listed out the shots that I wanted, because in order to tell the story, I wanted to have plenty of coverage. As an editor, you always appreciate having that extra coverage. So this was the last thing we shot in here with Antonio. Again, this scene here with Cheech we shot earlier because Cheech had to go. Cheech does his own stunts too. Everybody's doing their own stunts. That's what's cool about these guys. This song here is by Tito La Riva and Tarantula. It's called Strange Face. It was, again, something I had in the computer and cut along with the movie and really liked the way it worked, so I kept it. Ended up keeping about 80% of all the temporary music I had on the computer because you just get used to it. The continuity person was going crazy. There was nothing was ever matching. Those candles being on all of a sudden and the bodies kept moving around the room. I told her I didn't care about any of that stuff. That things were going to move so fast and no one would notice. I didn't care at all. My motto in a movie like this is continuity, schmontinuity. You know, I mean, it's just I'd rather spend that time and money getting more shots than making sure everything is in its place, because people aren't going to notice. It's just moving too fast. You don't get any value out of that kind of detail. Takes time and money and moving people around and putting bodies back where they were, and it's just a waste of time. This sequence, we had to shoot again everything, just like everything, fairly quickly to get all the shots so I have enough to work with and build the sequence with. I wanted all this. It seemed kind of unnecessary for people to just kind of stand around watching, but it was necessary to build that long section. You needed a lot of different shots so it didn't seem too repetitive. And here comes the one and only Salma Hayek. That's my first AD there, sticking his head out. I wanted to introduce her with two cars crashing into each other because she's so beautiful. The studio actually didn't want to use her originally. They wanted a blonde. I had to screen test poor Salma, even though she knew that I had written the part for her. The scene we did in the screen test was the scene where she sews up the mariachi, and there was just no contest. I mean, she won it hands down. The studio even realized that and said, okay, you can use her. I think she's great in this, and I really wanted to cast a Mexican actress in the role of the Mexican girl. I know that's really radical casting, because it's just never done. But sure enough, it turns out that she's the first Mexican actress to be a lead in a Hollywood film since Dolores Del Rio back in the 40s. I mean, that's how long it's been. That's pretty much why I wrote the part for her. Here's the guacamole gun in the face. Save more time doing that. Just load it up and fire away. We had to do this in one shot because the sun was going down, and I used dissolves because I was directing the actors as I was shooting. We hadn't rehearsed it. I just blasted his face and was telling Salma to come pick him up, look at my hand. I was operating the camera while I was laying down on the job. I had my hand out as a view so they could look at that and use that as a point of view for the blown away face. We shot these bodies and everything laying right after we shot Antonio's scene there breaking the guy's neck. Now the reason it cuts from that to Bucho is because we shot Bucho weeks later. So that's why Bucho is shot against this background, and you don't see him tied in with the mayhem, because we had already cleaned up the mayhem by the time we shot this. We shot this weeks later. The reason for that is because this part was originally supposed to be Raul Julia.
Tell him to get his ass over here.
There's Mike Moroff. He plays the character Shrug, because all he does is shrug. He's another guy we brought in from L.A. to be one of the bad guys. I wanted the character of Bucho to have a couple of main bad guy buddies that he would have there that spoke English. Carlos Gomez plays Right Hand, his right hand man. Of course, his name's Right Hand as a character. I think the kid's name is just Niño, which means boy. More creative names. Raul Julia, we could only afford Raul Julia for 9 days, so I had scheduled all of Bucho's stuff to be shot at the end of the schedule. So all of this was done in the last 9 days or so. It's less than that, it's more like 7 days.
Came looking for me.
And since Raul Julia actually got sick just before this, so at the last minute, we had to, just before he passed away, we had to replace him with Joaquin, who I had originally wanted to play the part of Right Hand. So if you look at these shots of Bucho, you notice we don't see any of the destruction behind him because it was all cleaned up. And then we had to really storyboard these shots out ahead of time so I could figure out how we were going to shoot around it. And I got carried away with the storyboard, started doing some stylized drawings. That's why this angle and this other angle look like comic book pages, because I had drawn them out before in a comic style. And here is the needle scene. We brought in a makeup prosthetic guy for this one day here with the wound, because I wanted her to be able to dig into his arm. And so he put a fake arm piece on top of his real arm so that she could dig in really deep and pull pieces of meat out and junk. This was a funny scene because we had shot a lot of the action already. I think we'd already even shot the big shootout at the end. We wanted to get all the action out of the way in case the weather turned on us. There were hurricanes going on at the time, and it was causing radical weather changes. So we wanted to get rid of all the action first. But what that did for us as crew people was it just really freaked us out, because we were in such a fast pace, used to moving the camera around 60 times a day, that by the time we got to this scene, it just seemed like everything grinded to a halt doing the dialogue scenes. You need about 20 shots a day on one of these things. So everybody was like falling asleep on the set. Everyone was just like not used to that slow pace. We're actually moving fast because we were shooting a lot of dialogue, a lot of pages each day, but nothing compared to the energy that we had in those action scenes. My first day, AD came up to me several times and said, "Isn't there some car blowing up you need? I can go shoot and let me get out of here." And I said, "No, you suffer here like the rest of us." It was a fun scene to shoot. It was just that after 5 weeks of pure action, we just didn't want to do it. That's another reason why I refused to use a second unit crew, because a second unit gets all the fun stuff, see? All that action we were shooting, most of it would have been done by the second unit, you know? I don't know who came up with that idea. That's the fun stuff. I would have been stuck just doing the dialogue.
I use it to pick up girls.
Ooh, good sound effects. Sound effects were,
Steve
Burrell does the sound effects for me. He's, young, energetic, hardworking sound supervisor. Gets a bunch of other guys on Macintosh computer Pro Tools systems, and they're all sitting around my house doing the sound effects. We did most of this in-house.
That's right.
It's all come down to that. All computers, digital, compact. And then we would put all the sound out on D88 decks and take them onto the sound stage and hook them up to the system and mix right off of there. We do our temporary mixes also for screenings right out of our living room.
It's the least I can do for you after saving my
life. Just makes it becomes less. Usually what you do is send your movie off to a sound house and they put who knows who on it cutting the sound. This way you get to handpick people you want to work with and put them all in one place. And all y'all work together on the movie. It becomes more like almost like a film school. Like you're all stuck in a house making a student film or something. You take more pride in the work, I think. They did a really, really good job with the sound. Especially for the amount of money we had and time we had. It's really elaborate. My second AD there on the ground playing the corpse. He plays a good corpse. Look at the way his body dangles. He's great. That big guy picking him up, he owns the furniture shop there in town. We put him in the movie because we rented out his furniture shop for the studio. We made that our back lot.
Go on, get out of here.
Build our sets inside the furniture shop. That big Indian guy there, he's like one of our transpo guys. He wanted to be in the movie, and I was like, oh, please, please be in the movie. We need all the big guys we can get. He's got a great look. He's one of the few bad guys in this movie that doesn't get killed. Danny Trejo, the guy who was just there with the knives, I handed him that throwing knife to go practice because I wanted him to, as soon as I cast him, I wanted him to get used to flipping that thing around. What I did was I took regular practice throwing knives, the metal ones, and out of the top portion, I drew out a crucifix design, and then I cut it out. Cut out a little crucifix design so it would look more elaborate and put in a Velcro vest around his waist. So you'll see later the reason it looks like a cross, looks like a really strange knife. It's really just a regular throwing knife with just a design cut out of the top. Make it look... Oh, here we go. This guitar case has the crotch gun inside. That's what she's going to pick up in a minute. The thing that got cut out. It showed up a couple places. Actually showed up later in the left scene. He shot a hole through the guitar. That was an alternate take that, of course, we didn't use because I cut out the crotch gun. I wasn't sure if it was going to work. We ended up using it much better in From Dusk Till Dawn. But this is a prototype. That's why it's so big and hefty and fat. And the one we used in Dusk Till Dawn that Tom Savini wears is much more streamlined and works much better. This one was big and bulky, and I didn't quite have the design yet down yet. I drew it up, and then when it was built, it was too big. She's gonna pull it out now, and you'll see what it is. The design is works well. By now, you may have seen From Dusk Till Dawn. The codpiece opens up, the barrel, gun barrel pops up, and the two cylinders drop down to the side like testicles. It's all these gun movies are all. Are all phallic symbols anyway, so I thought I'd take it the extra step and make it the Pistolero, which is the movie was originally called. It's like a little mini tank that he wore around his waist, and as he says here, he says it saved his life many times, and we would have seen that earlier in the earlier scene.
Oh no.
Instead it's just used here as a quick joke. No. Ask if she wants it, and she says, no, I'm fine, thanks.
Will you help me?
I'm going through my computer again here, as all those clicking noises are. Wrote down notes about everything I want
to
say.
I need to leave my
got about halfway through the movie before. Before we find out that this is the latest date I could do this. So if I'm fumbling around, please forgive me.
Yeah. Right.
So where are you going?
I have to go to church.
What for?
Confess my sins. I'm a sinner.
I know.
Did I thank you?
No, you didn't.
Okay. I will.
In Mariachi, I wrote around things that I already had. I made it easy, actually, to write the script. I mean, we had a school bus, we had the turtle, we had the town, and I just wrote all those elements in. But in this movie, I could have almost anything. Not really, because we had a limited budget, but we did have a budget. So the task became, well, what am I going to write about now? Now I can have just about anything. So I had to limit myself again. So what I did was I came up with a few props and locations, and I wrote the story around that. So this was one of the props. I wanted to use a bulletproof limousine. These guys usually have bulletproof Mercedes and all kinds of cars. And I thought we could come up with some action for that. And we ended up using this in the knife fight. The knife, they leave one of the windows open, and the knife guy ends up getting in there anyway. And even though it's bulletproof, they end up losing a few bad guys. He gets the knife into the cracks.
Words. I'll go and get
the mirror.
The movies, going back to that big shootout scene, the movies I do usually have a lot of shots in them. The reason I do that is because, one, as an editor, I like to have a lot to cut, and a love editing and I love having enough shots to cut, but mainly it makes the movie look more expensive. I realized that people in the industry thought the first Mariachi looked more expensive than 7,000 because there were just so many setups. I mean, a setup is every time the camera changes position. Not only were there a lot of cuts, but each time the camera cut, it cut to a different camera angle or setup. And that usually means money, because it takes time for a crew to especially a good-sized crew, move the camera around, to readjust lights, and most movies have big crews, and to actually change the camera position is usually a big deal. So you usually get 12 to 15 camera setups a day if you're really, really fast. What I do is I have a smaller crew. I operate the camera and the Steadicam so that we can cut down even more on the size of the crew. I grab a lot of the camera angles so that it looks like we shot for a lot of days. And it costs a lot less because we don't shoot for as many days. We were averaging 55 camera setups a day on this movie, on average. Most movies, like I said, get maybe 12 to 15. We got more than that usually. It's just that the average is lowered by the fact that we have 5.5 shooting days per week. So that half day, you only get 20, 25 setups maybe. Because it's a half day and that brings down the average. But many days, especially in the action scenes, we're getting 60, 70 camera setups a day. That's a lot. That's a lot for any action movie, where you don't have a second unit and we don't have a whole lot of cameras. Especially because in action movies, you're waiting a lot. You're waiting for the squibs, you're waiting for the stunts. You don't want people to get hurt, so you can only move so fast. So usually you have to make up for the amount of time by knowing exactly what camera angles you're going to get, exactly where the camera's going to go. That's why I operate mainly, is because it takes so long to explain to people where you want stuff. It's easier just to grab the camera, drop down on the floor, crawl up on top of a bookcase or something and get the shots. We're really flying. I really wanted this movie to look like a Hong Kong film or a John Woo film. Those movies, I mean, if you've ever seen Hard Boiled or The Killer, you've seen that those movies have tons of shots and setups. They look very elaborate and complex and expensive. The reason for that is that John Woo shoots for a very long time in order to get that. I mean, in Hard Boiled, I believe they shot for over 120 days. It's less expensive to shoot in Hong Kong. They were able to shoot for that many days. You don't get that many days here in the U.S. I mean, that was 120. We had 39 to shoot this movie. So in order for it to look as big as one of those movies, we couldn't buy more filmmaking days. That would have been too expensive. So the trick was, all you can really do is just triple the amount of work each day. And the way you do that is not to increase the amount of workers you have on a set, but actually to decrease it. Because you're going to run a marathon, you don't gain 100 pounds. I mean, you get lean and you get mean. All the extra luxuries and goodies, they have to get thrown out right off the bat. I operated the main camera and the stunt camera so that I could get the shot I needed faster and get onto the next shot and not waste a lot of time. So these scenes seem like they have a lot of energy. It's because we had a lot of energy shooting it. We were moving very, very quickly. So as we got a shot, we couldn't get too happy with ourselves. We had to keep moving. Oh, that paint, by the way, is wet. The paint behind Bucha, we didn't finish that set in time. Because of the weather changes, we had to move this set up. And you can see my wife was painting, Cecilia was painting, just seconds before we shot this.
Hey, fuckheads, what's the number to the phone in my car?
Number.
Oh, that guy right there on the right of, not the guy who was talking, but the other guy. He's from the first Mariachi. I didn't recognize half of these guys. A lot of them lost weight, some of them gained weight, some of them grew beards. We were hiring these locals, and it wasn't until midway through that I realized these were guys from my first movie. They looked so different. Those big horses there were the neighbor's horses. We saw them, and we grabbed them and tried to fill out this place. We found that big Jeep there. Someone was driving around town. Whenever we spot a car we liked in town, we would contact the person, paint their car, pay them to use their car just to make a... Because we didn't have any vehicles. We needed to make the picture look like we had vehicles. This was something we shot early in the shoot, because we had to get rid of Steve Buscemi in those 7 days, so there's the Velcro, there's the knives. You see, they're throwing knives with designs cut out of them. This was a nightmare shoot, this scene. I thought this scene was going to blow. We had the knives, we hollowed out some aluminum knives and put them on wires, and they kept bouncing off of Steve's chest. They weren't working at all. That was the one take that worked all right. That one didn't work at all either. Now we just had the knife already stuck in his arm. It was really, really not coming out. And it was super hot that day. It was like 115 degrees out there. It was just burning us up. And we're all dressed in black, and I had the Steadicam and the other camera on. It was just killing us. It was only the first week of shooting. That effect right there with the blood squirting out, no time for big blood squibs or anything. That was my prop guy with a little squeegee back there, or what do you call that, a little pump, a little hand pump with blood. He just squirted it out on cue. Those we just ended up just already sticking the knives inside the guy's chest. The wire thing just wasn't working. But, you know, with the editing and sound effects, and it ended up working out fine. Here's Danny, man. Danny rocks. Danny's doing all his own stunts, throwing rubber knives right into my camera. He's done doing all his own stunts, hot as hell out there. He's cool. I want to put him in all my movies. He's like a great guy. These are local guys. They're trying hard. The reason their sunglasses look funny is because you see reflections if you leave them alone. So we have to spray them with dulling spray, so they can't tell what they're doing. They're running around shooting blindly. They can't see, so we don't see our reflections in their glasses. This was a really bloody scene. We had to cut it back a lot because the MPAA. Antonio here is really committing 100% to this. I mean, he saw how earlier in the day these knives weren't working at all. But he was taking it and really, through the performance, really selling the pain factor. These little aluminum knives that were tossing around just weren't cutting it. But he really sold it. I think that's the main advice I can give as far as if you have a modest budget, or any budget actually, and you're trying to make it look more, you want to put more up on the screen. The big trick is just planning, knowing your shots. It helps, for me it helps that I'm an editor, because I can think like an editor as I'm not only writing but when I'm shooting. As far as getting only the stuff that you really need, a lot of time can be wasted, a lot of money spent getting unnecessary coverage. Since these shots on Bucho, I knew I only needed a close-up and a medium shot, so I didn't shoot it from every possible angle. I just shot what I needed as an editor to get the shot, to get the scene together. Planning your day, especially, so that you get ahead and not behind, because it's very easy to get behind, and when you start getting behind, you start sacrificing the really, the extra shots that really help take it the extra distance. So, a lot of it is, once you've shot a movie, you've kind of got a sense of how long things take. And you can plan things better.
Go and find him. Go and find who? There's no one else. He's been claimed as one of the Colombians. They just won't admit that they're trying to go after you, Bucho.
There's someone else out there. I know there is. And I want to find him now.
Who else is there? The guitar player? The guy is a myth, man, a myth.
You are not a believer, Memo. And that will be your downfall. I'm going with you. I can't leave this up to you anymore. Now my ass is on the line.
This scene is all over the place. We shot, this was like one of those scenes where we shot Antonio one place one day because we ran out of sun, and shot the kid another day somewhere else. And Antonio and the kid do their own stunt in this next shot. This is a big bus coming at him. And you achieve that and do it safely by stacking the lens. I got really far away with, it was like a 250mm, might even be in a 600mm lens. And the truck wasn't even coming at them. It was going, if it kept going, it would have gone right by him. But because of the angle of the camera and it being stacked, it looked like it was headed, it looks like it's just a couple of feet away from him. This day was funny. It was a hot, hot day, really hot. It was in the hundreds, and the studio was coming down to visit us. Whenever you're shooting a movie anywhere, you don't want studio suits to come visit you, no matter what. Even if they're coming to just to support you. Just anytime the boss shows up, you just like, you want to hide. So it was really, really hot this day, and I had the Steadicam on, and I was sweating. I had, when I took off the Steadicam, I would have the marks of the Steadicam still on and sweat. I told everybody in the crew, say, when the studio gets here and they say how hot it is, tell them that, oh no, it's actually pretty cool today. It's usually hotter than this. And we did that. When they came, they made the comment that, wow, it really is hot down here, isn't it, guys? So, no, actually, it's been lighting up. It's been a lot hotter than this. It's not so bad. We can actually walk around now. fall down. Oh, there's my dolly grip right there. That's Kimba. It was Kimba Day this day. Kimba's great dolly grip. So anyway, the studio, they left right away. They didn't stay for very long. They ate lunch in the shade and then took off. They didn't want to hang around this place. If this was a cool day, they wanted out of there. That's it. I'm out of notes. Usually what I do so that I'm prepared for these things is I write down notes ahead of time so that I know what I want to say for each scene. Again, working on Dusk and this coming up so quickly. Trying to get it out on the first disc. I didn't have time to finish the rest of it, so I'm going to freewheel it from here. Hopefully I'll give you information that is worthwhile.
My father doesn't have to work. He sits at home and watches TV. My dad says they had it all over. The 80s with baby carriages, the church, bookstores. Ask Carolina. She'll tell you. She does the same thing.
This is a scene where we had a lot of dialogue to get out. I designed that shot right there because we shot so out of sequence. We didn't know that Antonio was supposed to be as bloody as he was in that other scene. We had shot this first, where his bandages aren't really that tight and he's not bleeding that much and he's not that sweaty. So we shot that exterior shot where he's cleaning his face to kind of explain why he's so clean. That's the problem with shooting out of sequence. We didn't foresee it being as hot as it was and him getting as bloody and beat up as he did. So he looks pretty clean here.
If I was protecting him, I would have told him you were here by now.
Why should you want him dead?
This kind of stuff's tough to shoot. I didn't know how to shoot this thing. I was like, God, all this dialogue. And I just plopped the camera down. I shot close up on Antonio. And my DP, Guillermo, shot a low wide angle just to get them yelling back and forth on top of each other, because it would have been impossible to edit if I had done any typical coverage. So I just let him go at it.
Anybody can be
butler. Not anybody.
Oh, you're so good, huh? You see this bookstore? It's my bookstore.
This store right here is, you see it in Mariachi. This is right next door to Carlos Gallardo's house. Carlos is my co-producer, and we shot Mariachi together in the original Mariachi. This is a pharmacy that he owned there. So we gutted his pharmacy and put this bookstore in there.
$50,000.
Cash.
There's no music tunes or any of this, but for the music, I got Los Lobos to score it. I've always liked their music, and recently they've been still seeming like they experiment a lot. Even on Kiko and the new one they're working on, which I've heard some of, they've been playing together over 20 years. And they're still not afraid to experiment, so I really wanted to do a score with them because I knew it wouldn't be a typical movie score. It would be a little more rock-oriented, a little just quirkier. They were getting ready to record the new album, so we didn't have much time. I had a couple weeks to do the score. So I would sit in a room with them. Cesar Rosas has a small studio in his house there in an old bedroom. These guys just sit around and they come up with stuff and they just pull it out of the air. It's amazing. I was there sitting with them and I would try and watch and see what they were doing and play along. Played on a few of the tracks. Play a little bit of guitar. But just so we could bang the music out, because we had so much music. I wanted a different piece on each scene. I didn't want themes running through the movie where you hear the same theme going over and over again.
The closest thing I had to a real brother was just killed. I cannot stop what it is I have to do. I cannot.
It seems like it's its own movie. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end. Because I know how I watch movies now, especially in a Laserdisc. You skip around to the different scenes, and you don't watch the whole thing after a while. You just watch your favorite parts. So I split the movie up into really clear chapter stops. So if you go to the chapter stop, which is The Customer is Always Wrong, the first one, you see Steve Buscemi's little movie there, movie within a movie. You go to the music title sequence is his own little movie. You go to the big bar shootout that begins with, that reel begins with Antonio walking into the bar with Cheech, and it ends with the blood on his face. So it's almost like a complete little 10-minute movie. The scene with the knives is its own movie. The scene where she's singing to him, it begins with her whispered singing and it ends with a big explosion. That's its own chapter stop. That's kind of like how I saw this picture. It was several short films put together.
Not in this town.
So you have one experience watching it completely, but then you have a completely different experience if you just watch the individual chapters. So I wanted the music to be the same way. Antonio and I were laughing throughout this whole part with him with a gun. We're improvising him loading the gun in the back.
Have you seen anyone around that may...
Salma was afraid we wouldn't show any of her scene out here. I would just be paying all the attention to Antonio. We had so much fun shooting him with his faces and goofing off.
No.
The guy that I'm looking for...
So the music we recorded... Sometimes very simply, we would just mic the guitars right there in the room. I would watch the band and try and play along so that, because sometimes they'd come up with a riff or a tune and just pull it out of air and just start playing it. And then they would get to talking about something else and they forgot what they were playing. And I'd been watching, so I'd play it back to them and say, this is what you're playing. It's unbelievable how much stuff they come up with. It probably just disappears because they might forget what they had come up with or played. And
but we can't have it.
These very creative guys always coming up with stuff. Mm-hmm. Very fast. Mm-hmm. Come up with an arrangement, come up with a tune, get an arrangement down, make it kind of sparse so that it would fit under dialogue. Then I would take it back and put it in a computer and edit it. And sometimes I would have them do multiple passes of different instruments and then
wouldn't lie to me.
I would pick and choose later back at the house. They didn't have much time. I didn't want to make them finish the music there. It would take forever. So I would get all the basic tracks, and then I would go back and cut them together. So sometimes reconstruct songs and construct the songs there at home on a computer. Put them back out on DA88 tapes. Sometimes two full tapes of the tracks were very elaborate. Sometimes it'd be 14 tracks, even once it was mixed down.
Yes.
So I'd have a lot of leeway. And then I was the music mixer on the movie. We had two sound mixers, Tennyson Sebastian and Sergio Reyes. They were my effects and dialogue mixers. And then I was the third mixer. I mixed the music. I love mixing the music.
Yes, you're not doing anything to him around here. All you girls, both girls. And I don't want to die over this, okay? Stay away from the windows before they see you.
Most of our crew people show up in this wedding scene. That's where the rest of them got to be. I tried to find roles for everybody, but in the end, most of them showed up in the crowd scene in this scene. Yeah, there they are. All lined up. This was the last day of shooting. This was an extra thing that I had on the script with the wedding. It was one of the things that I knew we could just take out if we didn't have time to shoot, so it was just an extra. And, We got it together. You see the sun going down. In fact, they're in shade because the sun's behind them. We barely got it. This is a song that David Hidalgo played from Los Lobos. He made this in a little Porta studio. This is from one of his Tascam Porta studios. He was playing me ideas that he has. He's always coming up with stuff. I don't know what kind of dreams that guy has at night, but he has the strangest music sometimes. A lot of it is that style is in the Latin Playboys music. But he played me his little four-track Porta Studio number, and I said, oh, that sounds perfect for the wedding. It sounds like guys with cans and little drums and weird horns. So we just stuck it in just the way it was, and it's on the soundtrack.
I think he's a terrible person.
Oh, honey, he is. He is.
This was the love scene day. Everybody wanted to help out on this day. I had to clear the set. Everybody wanted to be there. I never had so much help before. I kind of encourage everybody to do two or three things. That's kind of what it became, turned into. In the shootout that follows, you'll see that guy with the missing teeth, David. He's going to show up as one of the stunt guys and get shot. I mean, everybody had two or three jobs on the movie. It became that if you didn't have at least two or three jobs on the movie, you were considered dead weight. So,
I didn't get you a case.
This day, everybody wanted to have that third or fourth job by working on the set. So what we did was I shot mariachi style. I just shot a slate at the beginning of each roll of film. And then I didn't have any other slates. And since I was the editor, I mean, I don't need slates. That's what I kept telling everybody. I was like, I don't need slates. This is I'm cutting the movie. I know where the things are. Just so the lab can find it. That's all you need.
Oh, sorry.
So everyone got cleared from the set. And it was myself, my DP.
No, I can't play.
And the two actors.
Why?
We were both. I had two cameras going at the same time.
I can't.
Okay, we can improvise. I'll help you.
Improvise.
Right here, originally, we have another take, which I wanted to provide, but since this thing had to get put together so quickly.
A little.
All right.
We have the shot, the footage of the crotch gun going off here and blowing a hole through the guitar. It was just too funny. We had to cut it out. It broke up the whole scene. Like I said, it does play in another movie later on, so I didn't mind cutting it out. Anyway, I'd find a place for it somewhere. I think Antonio really has the qualities of the original mariachi sometimes in his the way he plays this part. I mean, here this scene reminds me of something that could be in the first movie. Even though he's a much harder, darker character. Typical exploitation films fashion, he's like a really dark character now. But he has some touches of the innocence that was in the first film. I storyboarded all kinds of shots. Salma was nervous about her first love scene. And I storyboarded some gag shots too that she thought I was really gonna do. But it turned out really, we shot it in 4 hours, so it came out. Come on, really good. I mean, that whole bit you just saw with the dialogue as well as the love scene. The candles we had just burned down to nothing. You see there, it's just a wick left. They were just, actors kept getting burned because that wax was dripping all over them. They're like, Jesus, some of the candles would break and stuff would fly all over them. We'd come up with gags like the spur and laugh about it and ended up using it. It's kind of documentary style. There's a lot of dissolves. That's why there's so many dissolves in this. I'd heard this song, and I just always loved the Santana Beja song. This is a Carlos Santana solo album that he put out a few years back, and Beja was just one of my favorite tunes he did. And I cut the scene just kind of temporarily to this music until we did a new song with Los Lobos, but things got late, and I just fell in love with the song, so we ended up just keeping it the way it was. For contrast, we cut to Bucho. See him slapping her. He slapped her on the butt right there. He was supposed to be signaling her when to get off when the dolly moved there. And that take, he hit her really hard. So I left it in almost as if he was signaling to hurry up and climax so she could get out of the way so he can go back to smoking his cigar. If you notice at the beginning of the shot, he has his feet crossed. It's like the laziest lovemaking. His feet are crossed and he's just casual and his mind is somewhere else. This is Tito La Riva and playing this little song that the little boy played earlier. That's what I like about my crew, is my crew's really hardcore. They were, it's mostly Mexican crew from Mexico. Usually when people shoot in Mexico, they take their own crew down, and then the Mexican crews work as second assistants or assistant assistants. But I made these guys the first team. I made them the first string. So I had Mexican crew members were the main first guys on the set, the first of camera assistants, the first everything. So they were really determined to do a good job, and they were very creative. Our prop guy dropped the ball on this shot here. It was supposed to be a guitar-shaped ashtray, and he forgot to make it. So my set decorator, Felipe, went, grabbed a coconut or some piece of wood and started gnawing it with his teeth. In 30 minutes with his teeth, he carved out that guitar, painted it, smoothed out the inside, and that's where we got that guitar ashtray. This is my favorite scene in the movie. When I wrote it, I was laughing. Salma, when we were shooting Road Racers, was singing the song all whispered like that, almost like Marilyn Monroe. And I thought, oh, that gave me a new idea for this scene, which had the mariachi actually playing to her originally, just playing the guitar before the guys came, which wouldn't have been any good at all. This is so much better because you get to play the whispered music, all the shots. And I got so excited when I was writing. I was just laughing out loud when I was writing it, thinking about shots of the gun passing in front of her face. This is what's great about working on a movie from beginning to end through the editing, because you get to see it in the writing stage. You have to shoot all these pieces. Antonio was sick this day too. He was not in a good mood, and he really pulled it off. We had to get a lot of shots very quickly. We had a half a day to shoot all this stuff here before we got into the action. And there's just tremendous amount of shots to pull it off. Shots with light, tricky shots with shadows, close-ups of her, and have the music sync up. It's a real logistical kind of screwy thing, because I recorded the song, pre-recorded it, but I had to figure out where she would be singing when the gun passed in front of her head. So I had to storyboard it almost like an animated film in order to get all these things to match so that she's ending the song right when the gun is passing in front of her. I mean, it's amazing how fucked up this was and that it came out at all. So that he kicks her right at the end of the song. It was a real timing. Here's my same guys. There's that was Hank. There's Hank again. We have there's the guy without the teeth getting shot right there. That was him with a mustache and a Steve Davison coming through the window. There's Hank getting blown away. Hank and Troy doing their thing. Mom! This song was one of my favorites that Los Lobos did. I sat down and I said, I want a Matador, James Bond, Spanish action song. And we started playing this. Lots of drums. We have like timbales and all kinds of percussion. This was like a 16-track song. We had so many tracks going with all kinds of guitars. I had cut in different acoustics and electric guitars playing throughout to make this.
You look great.
In fact, they couldn't duplicate it when it went to the soundtrack, so you don't get to hear any of this on the soundtrack. You hear a short version of the song, but not this version. This is a better version. And again, there's a lot of energy in this scene, I think, because we had to shoot so fast. We had a little flame bar in front of them, and then at the end of the shoot, we really burned down the bookstore, and those are the real actors in front of it. And it was so hot in there. Cameras almost exploded. It was burning up. This is a stunt guy that I met when I shot Mariachi. We couldn't afford to have him in Mariachi, but I promised if I ever made another movie, I'd bring him back, and so he got to come do that. That gunshot that he put, Antonio shot right into his chest, that's just flash paper. If you notice, the gun didn't cock or the bullet doesn't eject, nothing, because it's not a real gunshot. It's just like a little piece of flash paper to make the smoke and fire, and then the sound effects over it helps make it look like it really shot into him. This was a scary day. I hate heights. Antonio, I think, was afraid of this day too, because we knew we were doing our own stunts. I had the camera on handheld with the rope around my waist so I didn't fall over the edge, because there's no edge. And both Salma and him did their own stunt without a net, because we had him on a wire, on a crane. She did that jump, and then Antonio does his own jump backwards. We had to do several takes with him just dangling. I'm hanging off the side, he's hanging off the top. And he just pushed himself off with such force. I mean, I don't think a stuntman would have been able to do that anyway, because nobody looks like him when he moves. And what you do is you erase the wires digitally later. This is Bob Shelley. He's just great at making great explosions that are safe, that are close up. And I mean, this is right on the actors. It looks like they're on fire. It's so close to them, but it's in a safe distance. And it's just propane or gas. I don't remember what he used. In a little barrel. This is one of the last days of shooting. We've already burned down the bookstore, and so we just gutted it and put some fire bars in there. It was a really crappy day. It was starting to rain. The weather was screwed up because of the hurricanes, and it's actually drizzling or raining here, I think, and it's cloudy and overcast, and we didn't think it was going to match anything. It was a tough shoot. These rooftops in Mexico, wow. We thought we were going to go right through them. They were like made out of paper. We're walking delicately on top, as softly as we could around the edges. Of course, it doesn't make any difference. Wherever you step, you could potentially go through it. And this is actually shot on one rooftop. It's concrete. And then this is shot on the other flimsy one. We're pretty high up in order to tie it in with the limousine. Shot a few.
Motherfucker.
This took some time. Whenever you want to get a cool shot, it just always takes time. I saw that by accident during rehearsal, and I kept trying to get it, his eyeball to line up in there, and barely got that one. We just didn't have, when you don't have a long schedule, you don't get to spend a lot of time on those details, but as a director, you always want them, so you're trying to find a way to make it work. And usually that ends up making everything else sped up.
What are you doing?
I was on Steadicam on this, and just to get it in a couple of takes, because the actors were really tired and we didn't want to drag it out, especially an emotional scene. You don't want to drag it out too long, so I try to cover it as much as I can. I just follow them around with a Steadicam. Really on the fly. That's why you see this boom shadow over here. Right there. I just left it in. I kept thinking I was going to go replace a shot, but it just wasn't worth it. I thought, oh, who cares? Boom shadow. Antonio really pulls her up here. just did a take after take. Almost pulled her arm out of her socket. She's really saying ouch there. But he covers her up there. But I think that was kind of nice. Gets the skirt and covers up her legs. She's wearing some skimpy outfit. You can really see how nice the set is. Cecilia, my production designer, added that extra wing to that old building. Added the she just was smart about the lighting and how it would affect the building by putting those sticks and just putting some twigs and branches up there. And those cross beams just gave it a nice look.
How can you let him get away when you knew where he was?
Joaquin is great in this. It was his idea to play it so quiet. And then start blowing everybody away. I mean, this was just really coming together. Him and Carlos Gomez, the right hand, would hang out all night each night. We'd have to come in and put Preparation H under their eyes because they had bags under their eyes because they hung out all night so they could create a bond. And really look like co-workers in this.
It must be him.
Here's Mike playing Shrug. One last Shrug before he dies. All these guys are extras. Local guys. We told them to run. We said, just run, run. We were hoping they didn't hit each other with those guns running. We just started shooting at them and jumping all over stuff. Those guns right there. Yeah, you get to go. That's kind of what's fun about making a movie is you go to the gun shop and they rent guns and you just pick the weapons you're going to use for the movie. We had to use the same gun over and over. That gun is used by like four different characters. We only had a handful of guns. It looks like we have a lot, but we don't. It's just all camera tricks. Once we took our guns down to Mexico, we couldn't bring any new ones in. And those guns, I picked them for their size, but then once you got them down there, I don't shoot guns. I never shot a gun before. When I got them down there, I realized how big those cannons were. Those were like 50 caliber guns, and you could hear them all across town. They were so loud, it wasn't even funny. And it doesn't look that powerful on the movie, and you can't make it as loud as it is in a movie, because it won't, your optical tracks can't hold the sound that big. It's like cannons, real cannons. Really loud. Antonio was doing these flip tricks all throughout the set, all throughout the shoot. I wanted to incorporate it somewhere. He'd gotten pretty good at the guns.
It was always like this, you know.
I can see that.
I left the crappy walls behind him. Cecilia is great at that. She just stresses things to the point that it looks like someone wiped their ass on the wall. It's like crap everywhere. It doesn't look that bad here. But in person, you see it, and you thought, it really looked awful. Really looked moldy, really looked nasty. Everything's peeling off. I mean, who would even stay in a hotel like that? But we knew that on film, it would look just about right. I think most movie sets look like movie sets. You look at a movie, they're afraid to make stuff look used, to really dirty things up and look like it's been distressed. We go the other way, where everything looks like it's falling apart. And it creates a nice background, especially because when you're shooting, you usually use a longer lens. It goes out of focus in the background, and you can't tell that wall's peeling because it's out of focus. It just gives it a nice texture.
Why didn't you kill Mucho?
My crew is really cool. We didn't have, the crane didn't show up. Our production screwed up and didn't get us a crane. So my Mexican crew, they start building this monkey bars outside. The window, or three, four stories up, and they put the light on top of there to come through, and they're all holding it. They were just standing out there holding the thing together, almost like a human pyramid. And I was really thankful. I think we bought them a nice present after this day because they were going beyond the call of duty. I know any other crew would just say, "Ah, screw this." These guys were always thinking, always working, always coming up with stuff. Really, really great guys.
Campa. Keen.
I really enjoyed the crew I had in Mexico. I'd heard negative comments back when I was here, people asking me, even from the studio, people saying, you know, almost making fun of the fact that we had Mexican crew as if they couldn't work or do as good a job. And I would just tell them, I said, man, I'll tell you something, these guys can work harder and better than pork circles around a lot of the crews we have here in the U.S. because they don't know so much about what can't be done. You know, everyone here thinks they know everything. Crews think they know everything that's possible and everything that isn't. And that's just not true, especially if you're working with somebody like me who's unorthodox to the bone. I mean, I'm just doing everything wrong, if you can call it wrong, because there's no one right way to do anything anyway. And with these guys, are always being inventive and creative, and I could just see myself, you know, working. So, and I've worked with crews before where you try and do something different, and they're like, no, that's not the way you do it. This is the way you do it. You know, they know only one thing. These guys were always being inventive. Everything was possible. And they would just figure it out. And that's how I like to work. That's why I use crews that aren't that experienced. I have some experience, but not so much that they think they know everything. Because you can get a lot more out of them. You can dig a lot deeper and come up with a lot better stuff, new ways of doing things. And it's the crew just has a great time because they really feel like they're making a film. They're not just working on a film, but they're making a film. It's not an assembly line. They're not there just to turn the little screw. They're actually getting to be creative and come up with stuff and reinvent. This is Tito La Riva and Tarantula. It's an old song of his called White Train. We took the vocal out and reworked it to make it sound more... it's almost like a rock concert. They're getting ready to go to a big show, the Three Mariachis. And here comes, this is a little truck that Carlos and I fell in love with around town. This is Carlos, the original mariachi. And it was driving around town. It's got the back chopped off. It's the weirdest looking thing. We finally tracked it down. We wanted him to drive into town with it. These weapons that we made, the guitar cases were like that one, the rocket launcher, and then the machine guns that Carlos have. Those were really working things. We drew up some drawings of how I wanted them to work. And like Mac-10s, I drew a guitar case that would be the shape around a Mac-10 so that we could have two Mac-10s in there with clips, 40 round clips, and that he could actually fire. Bob Shelley built the cases, my effects guy extraordinaire. Of course, I didn't appreciate any of this while I was shooting. I thought that Bob Shelley and his crew, there's three crew, like I said, his wife and his kid, that was it, there's three of them. And I thought that was a big size of crew for effects. I hadn't done a movie yet, except other than Mariachi and Road Races, which didn't have a big effects. But this movie, I mean, three people on the crew, I thought that was a big effects crew because that's three more people than I had on the first Mariachi. It wasn't until later that I learned in talking with other directors and even making other movies that a three-person team for a movie like this on effects is just ridiculous. It's really, really small. And we have those kind of hits hitting the guitar case and running towards the actors. Bob and his son are shooting them in the background, on the foreground. We have loads of ammunition. We have this thing to keep up because it was always jamming. Mac-10s jam all the time. To get those two to run smoothly, plus the rocket launchers to fly right, and to just have as many squib hits and as we do in this, and to shoot this in the 3 days that we had, I mean, it's just amazingly impossible. Plus, he's got to blow up the limousine. I wanted the limousine to flip over, and it was just too heavy. He put like nuclear bombs in there, and it wouldn't turn over. James Cameron told me that he was making a movie way back when, and he told his effects guys that they were taking too long, and the guy said, hey, we're understaffed. We've only got 16 people. And he's like, 16 people? That's 16 more than I had on the last movie. Well, we had three on this one, and these guys always had it together. So hats off to Bob Shelley and his family. This was so much fun shooting this thing. This is the old, this is a whorehouse. This is Boys Town. Because it looks like an old western town during the day. When we shot here on the first Mariachi, this is where his dream sequences were. The little boy bouncing the ball that turns in the head, it's right there on that street. We just dressed it differently. We made it, we crapped it up a lot. And here's where we tried to flip the limousine. We had a dummy in there that looked pretty good. We were going to flip it over and it didn't flip. It was a huge explosion. Little pieces hitting cameras and did not flip over. Bob tried twice and we just couldn't get it to flip. It actually works better this way. Guys are just locals, plus our two stunt guys doing their thing. I want them to come flipping out like a John Woo movie. That's Troy and Hank over there. Hank's gonna go flying in the air right now. Hank's good at this air ram stuff. There goes Hank. And here goes another guy. I think this guy's name is Carlos. He's done about 4 other stunts in the movie as well. This guy came in special from Mexico City. We needed another guy to fall on top of a car. There's Troy and Hank again. This is Troy getting shot. Troy goes down right there. There's a guy from Mexico City. He's going to do a nice car haul. Oh, that guy right there. That's the guy with no teeth again. He's back. It's no mustache this time. And a bandana. This guy came in from Mexico City for the car hit with a glass shooting out. Wanted him to blow himself up, but that'd be funny. Action scenes after action scenes. That's why this is its own chapter, because it's like another mini movie that starts with them coming to town, ending with the truck running over right hand and leaving. Carlos didn't want to die. He was lobbying not to get killed because he wanted to come back. So, oh, we can always figure out a way for you to come back. You gotta die because I don't know what to do with you if you don't. Antonio just gives him a look like, well, it's your own fault. You guys are always out of tune anyway. This was dangerous. I had to get in the car with Salma. She was driving like a maniac. I put a hockey mask on my face. She was determined to do her own stunt. This truck was not in the best shape. And she was in full character, and she was just trying to scare me. I had the camera handheld in there, and I didn't have there's no seatbelts, of course. I got my nose smashed with effects. My stunt coordinator was driving me around, showing me a shot, and he did a sudden stop. I actually hit another car, and my face went into my viewfinder while I was looking at the shot. And that's why I think there's a Premiere magazine picture of me with a bandage on my face. It's because I got smashed. Not that bad, but that was the dummy we had just running over. Good old dummies always work. We had a camera rig called Steady Shot, or I don't know. It's like the camera's at the end of a stick and you walk with it and it makes a really smooth low angle shot. We put a 16mm lens for that shot going into Carlos Gomez before he gets run over. This is just me on a wheelchair. Still, that guy right there with the doctor with a beard. That's my director of photography. He's got my sunglasses around his neck, if you notice. We didn't have all the medical gear, so we just grabbed things that look like medical gear. And I put my sunglasses around his neck. There he is, Memo, my great DP. Of course, I ended up having to shoot this scene myself because he had to be back there acting. Pulling focus and everything, trying to stay in focus on him as he walks up into it. You see it going in and out of focus. That's why it's like that, because we're understaffed again.
I'm not sure this is the place.
This is the place.
This place was pretty close to the town. It was the furthest we could really go without having to drive too far and find a house that was big. We put up a fake wall only about 1/5 of the way around the property. It's small, and we just framed it to look like it goes all the way around. Of course, it wasn't finished either. The doors aren't finished, the walls aren't finished, since this thing had to get moved up in schedule. Cecilia was mortified because it's just, you can tell it's just not done. All the detail, it needed another 4 days. I said, well, what can you do? It's all right, we'll just shoot. You can tell the paint's wet. Not quite there. One of those guys back there,
Anito,
is from the first Mariachi. A lot of these guys I didn't recognize at all. One of them is the guy who played the bartender in the first Mariachi. He's the one right over Bucho's shoulder. This was a terrible day to shoot. It was cloudy and overcast over Bucho. Those are the kind of problems you run into sometimes. We had to match bad lighting. So the shots here on Antonio was actually nice and sunny outside. But to match Bucho, we had to soak it and make it look bad. We had to put a screen up so that they matched.
Oh, I want to kill you right now. You disgraced me.
We always knew you were up to no good, Cesar.
We had to actually cut out a lot of this shootout because it was pretty bloody. A lot of people got blown around. And MPAA said, you have to cut this, you have to cut that. And so we just thought, oh, well, let's just cut it all out. We've already seen every other shootout. That's why we end this shootout with Antonio just blasting into the camera and then it fading out, because you don't have to see. We figured you don't have to see the whole, everything that goes on. But it was a big shootout with Carolina and with Antonio. And
isn't she the woman you love now? When we take away something, we replace it with something else. She's a real piece of work. Trust me, I know.
Sorry, this was a lot of fun. We had just shot the other stuff earlier, the last week before, and this weekend we packed the whole crew up and went to San Antonio to see the Rolling Stones came to town, and Bucho's a maniac. Joaquin, he's somebody gave him a microphone, and he was just there talking the whole time to San Antonio, on and on and on about who knows what, driving everybody crazy. He's a really fun guy.
You were his little guitarista, his little mariachi.
We were celebrating the end of the shoot for about a week before we even finished. We went to Rolling Stones. We did all kinds of stuff just to celebrate being done. We were having such a good time, we didn't want to go. This is a very short shoot, 7-week shoot for an action movie like this. It's just, it's pretty impossible, which is why we did it. But we're at the premiere. There was a couple executives behind me, or I don't know whether they were agents or somebody, and they were just whispering. Somebody told me that my wife was sitting next to him was saying that they were whispering the whole time, saying, $7 million. This cost $7 million. I can't believe it. I just made a movie that cost 10 times that. And we're having so much trouble with it. People were really impressed with what you can do if you really work hard. And they don't even make easy comedies for that anymore. The regular comedy when I started was about $12, $15 million. So. Oh, wow, you did see Butcher go down. Oh, I forgot about that. I had to cut that at the last minute. Cut that stuff out, so I forgot. In my mind, couldn't even remember how it ended, because it wasn't the version I was used to seeing. The father of the boy is going to show up here. This was a cover set. It started raining, so we had to shoot this right away. So we couldn't find the guy we had cast. So this was my costume dresser, Fito, and he looks fine in the role. Just grabbing crew members right and left. That's also why I use my DP as the doctor, the surgeon. We had already cast all those parts, but we couldn't. So many people don't have phones in this town that when it came time to shoot this at the last minute as a cover set because it was raining, we just had to start grabbing our own crew people and putting them in here.
I don't know.
I like the song a lot. This is Los Lobos. They played me a song that they had. It was arranged more like a waltz, and I told them I liked the tune, but I wanted to rearrange it with just guitar, bass, some bongos in the back, a couple of cymbal hits, real soft, and we just did it really quickly in one take, and it worked really well. I used it a couple times in the movie.
I will.
That's Antonio's line. Did I thank you? Oh, well, he came up with that. He's always coming up with stuff. He's really cool. He's made so many movies, he just knows what he's doing. He's got a really good feel for how he should be in a movie. And the more I'd let him invent, the more ideas he'd come up with. I was glad that I let him come up with so much stuff, because if you stop him from inventing early on, he'll stop coming up with stuff. Anybody would do that, you know, if your creativity is not let to expand. So he came up with all this. He wanted to throw the guitar case away at the end. We couldn't figure out the ending. So I shot 3 endings back to back and ended up using all 3. So the first ending is Antonio's, where he throws a guitar case. And this is Tito La Riva again. This is a song that he has called House of Love Built that I never thought I would use in the movie. It was just a song of his on the demo tape that I had in the computer, and I started laying it down just to have a rhythm to cut to, and I couldn't believe how well it worked, so that stayed in. And the lyrics fit, and everything fit really well. There he goes. That's Antonio's original ending. And I wanted him to come back and pick it up. The first ending, I kept joking with Salomo. The first ending was him at the beginning of this, where it showed him walking away. I told her he was just going to keep walking. He was going to just walk out of town with his guitar. That was the first ending. Second one was Antonio throwing the guitar case, and this is the third one where he picks it up. I thought I would put this at the very end after the credits, but I ended up just sticking them all together. Sisters were at the beginning. I forgot to point them out. Patricia Vaughn is one sister. Elizabeth Rodriguez is another sister. I always have siblings in all my other movies, the movies that we started off making. Patricia was the one with was the girl with a knife to her throat when Antonio comes and saves. And then my other sister, Elizabeth, is just there oohing and eyeing over Antonio while he plays. Second assistant director, Diego Sandoval. That's the guy with the guns when the guns are running empty. Then Los Lobos had another song where I had Jack the Ripper left over from Road Racers. I didn't put it in Road Racers. That song by Link Wray, Jack the Ripper, that's at the beginning. I had it in there just temporarily. I wasn't going to use it because it didn't seem to fit this movie. Anyway, this song was going to be a replacement for Jack the Ripper. And I love the riff on it. And didn't get to use it. And we needed another song at the end. So Los Lobos, very quickly, they said they'd never make a song like this. But they went ahead and did me the favor of laying a vocal down and let me put the song at the end. I really liked the riff. It was a smooth. Stuff to say as we run out of time here. Hope this stuff has been helpful at all to anyone wanting to make a movie. I know that people really supported the mariachi disc and really got stuff out of it. And yeah, I guess that's it. Crusado's fan, Steve Hufstetter, was the old guitarist from the first Crusado album. He came back and worked with Tito on some of the additional music. He's got that real spaghetti western guitar style. I was glad to get him back. I was always a fan of his from the early Crusado's days, and he came back just for the movie. The Hunter's Lodge Bar, that's the Boys Town Whorehouse District there. Thank you for joining me on part two of the mariachi series. We'll be back again for Once Upon a Time in Mexico. That'll be part three. Thank you and good luck in your future projects. And I hope to meet you someday.